Good morning. This is Linda, and we're going to be reading the Bloomington Normal Pantograph for today's of Wednesday, February 15th, 2017. We will begin with local news. First is the couple's fence giving back to residents in need. The sign on a metal link, chain link fence along West Washington Street simply says, "Take what you need, leave what you can." A container holds plastic bags and clothespins to hang items on what is called the giving fence. On Tuesday, bags with a boy's coat, colorful knit caps, and shoes hung on the fence near Morris Avenue that has been giving since the second week of January. The idea came to Taney and Matt Lathrop, who own Retrofit Culture at 1014 West Washington Street. They own the fence that is adjacent to their business that features vintage and handmade home decors, gifts, and clothes. "We were going through our stuff and we had too many hats and scarves and mittens," said Taney Lathrop. "So I think," I jokingly said, "I'm just going to put them on the fence, which we own, and put up a, quote, free, end quote, sign." It started me to think that if lots of people did it, then it could really be something and not just our stuff on the fence. Donations of winter gear is being sought for the fence. "We are looking for coats and gloves and mittens and scarves and hats and stuff to keep people warm when they are outside," said Taney Lathrop, adding the response has been amazing. Val Dumser, a longtime resident of the West Bloomington neighborhood, is among the donors. "I have actually put things on the giving fence and they are gone like in a day. It's crazy," said Dumpser. "I had put heavy socks on the fence and those were gone." Lathrop said she hasn't been monitoring the fence super closely because I want people to have their privacy. "But if I had to estimate, I would say 70 coats have been donated and taken off the fence, along with umpteen more scarves and hats and mittens," she said. She doesn't know the people who are donating items or those who are taking items home. "That's kind of the beauty of the project," she said. "I don't know if those people are in the neighborhood. They can be here all of a minute, drop stuff off and be gone, and I never know who they are, just like I never know the people who are picking up stuff." People also can get bags or drop-off items for the fence inside Retrofit Culture when the store is open. "I think it's a really easy way for people to give, and it's a really easy way for people who need something to come and do that without any stigma," said Taney Lathrop. Recently, Dumser said she saw six or seven coats hanging on the fence, and by the next day they were gone. "So obviously people are using it and benefiting from getting something warm to wear," she said. "Thank goodness it's not terribly cold, but eventually it will be. It's really been a marvelous thing for the neighborhood." "The fence will be seasonal," said Taney Lathrop. "The fence will go away when the weather breaks and we're not seeing people bringing in winter stuff," she said. "We'll go back to the fence when it gets cold again." But around April, vegetables will be grown in planters in front of the fence for people to freely take. "Lettuce will be first up," she said, adding the produce is being grown in partnership with the West Bloomington Active Garden, a community-supported project dedicated to growing fruit trees, herbs, and seasonal crops for the community. The Lathrops are happy they have found a way to help their neighbors and be part of a neighborhood in transformation, Taney Lathrop said. The Lathrop's business and residence are in one of three buildings that housed the West Side Clothing from 1910 to 2012. The couple purchased the properties in August 2015 and are slowly renovating the rest of the space that they call Washington Crossing Depot. "We love the diversity of the neighborhood, both in terms of race, ethnicity, socioeconomic class," she said. "There are people who have a lot and people who have a little. It's wonderful to see all of the people clipping things directly to the fence and going on their merry way." Grand Cafe, Green Top, Braze all seek liquor licenses. Bloomington. One of Bloomington's oldest restaurants, the Grand Cafe, will remain open but with new owners. Twin City Realtor Jimmy Mapuge and his wife Kelly are partnering with Adrian Deleuze to purchase the Chinese-American restaurant from Ike Chiu, a fourth-generation family member that has operated the restaurant at 615 North Main Street. Basically, we're going to continue the 97-year legacy of the Grand Café, said Jimmy Mapugay, while requesting a restaurant liquor license at the Bloomington Liquor Commission meeting on Tuesday. We want to be competitive by opening the bar and serving alcohol, he added. A lot of the customers are asking to have a little bit of alcohol, like wine or beer, with their dinners. After holding a series of public hearings Tuesday, Mayor Terry Renner, as the city's sole liquor commissioner, said he will forward liquor license requests made by the Grand Café, Green Top Grocery, and a second Braise restaurant to the City Council for action at its March 13th meeting. The Grand Café. Jimmy Mapugay said the sale of the restaurant is scheduled to close on March 28th. Once that happens, the restaurant will be closed for about 60 days for renovations. The new owners plan to keep the restaurant's current managers and staff as well as its menu. Jimmy Mapugay and Deluz are both from the Philippines and want to infuse the menu with Filipino dishes. The restaurant was started in 1921 in downtown Bloomington by Charlie B. Lum, a Hong Kong native who arrived in Chicago in 1918 and created a menu with Asian dishes that were modified to appeal to area residents. Since opening, the restaurant has moved locations numerous times and ownership passed through the family. Green Top Grocery. Green Top Grocery requested a liquor license to sell packaged beer and wine. We will have a beer and wine section in the store focusing on primarily locally produced beers and wines that we will sell at retail for consumption off-premises, said Michael Pennington, the store's general manager. Construction of the 10,000-square-foot co-op store is underway at the Foundry in the 900 block of East Washington Street. The store is slated to open in May or June, Pennington said. At the hearing, Mahesh Patel, owner of the convenience store Franzetti's Pantry Plus at the corner of Washington and Clinton Streets, objected to a liquor license for Green Top, saying competition from a large grocery store within a block of his store would significantly impact his business. I am an independent owner, not a co-op, said Patel. I've been at that location for 18 years. Patel said while he does not sell locally produced beers and wines, competition from Green Top is going to make a difference to my business. I suspect that you're probably right in that there may be some competition, said Renner in response to Patel's concerns. I don't know that it would be as much as you might think, partly because I see Green Top as a different business model than yours. Braise. Braise requested a restaurant liquor license for a second location that is scheduled to open on May 1st in the Park Regency Hotel and Conference Center, 1413 Leslie Drive. The location will offer an expanded menu and full-service bar. Braise, which serves brisitos, or loaves of French bread stuffed with sandwich filling, will also keep its original location at the Veterans of Foreign Wars location at 1006 East Lincoln Street in Bloomington. Program aids infants and mothers. Breast milk donations at County's First Depot find babies in need. This is out of Bloomington. Brianna Hickey and Ann Wolf extended helping hands to premature and critically ill infants, and they did it by placing breast milk into a deep freezer unit. I'm very happy to help sick babies whose moms can't keep up with the milk supply, Wolf said. Hickey and Wolf on Tuesday were the first donors to the McLean County Milk Depot at the County Health Department, 200 West Front Street in Bloomington. The milk depot opened at 4 p.m. Tuesday. This is great, said Hickey. It helps the population that can benefit the most from breast milk. Breast milk promotes growth of an infant's brain and retina and enhances cognitive development, resistance to infections, and reduction of allergies. Breast milk may also reduce a baby's risk of obesity and diabetes, may reduce a mother's risk of diabetes and breast milk, said Tammy Brooks, the Health Department's WIC. Infants and Children Nutrition, Education, and Supplemental Food Program Supervisor. Some prematurely born infants who are in hospital neonatal intensive care units and some critically ill infants aren't getting breast milk or enough breast milk from their mothers. Meanwhile, some lactating women produce more milk than their infants need, Brooks said. Some women whose infants die prematurely continue to pump breast milk and wish to donate it in memory of their child. Brooks said, the Mother's Milk Bank of the Western Great Lakes links lactating women to infants could benefit from their breast milk, she said. Sarah Berglund, Health Department breastfeeding peer counselor and certified lactation consultant, proposed to Brooks that the Health Department have McLean County's first milk depot. Brooks worked with the Mother's Milk Bank and Health Department administrators, and the two agencies agreed to partner together. Women interested in becoming milk donors can call Mother's Milk Bank to begin a screening process that includes a phone interview, application, check of medical records for the woman and her infant, and a blood test, Brooks said. Women who are approved are assigned a donor number and may donate containers of their frozen, pumped breast milk to the deep freezer unit at the health department. From there, it is shipped to Mother's Milk Bank, where it is tested and, if approved, then sent to NICUs or NICUs in Illinois and Wisconsin, Brooks said. The McLean County Milk Depot joins 11 other sites in Illinois. The closest is in Macomb. I was lucky enough to have the extra milk, said Hickey, 25, of Hudson, holding her one-year-old son, Isaac. I didn't want it to go to waste. I'm making much more than my son could drink, said Wolf, 37, of Normal, holding her nine-month-old son, Athanasius. I didn't want it to go down the drain. I'd like to have 30 donors within the first 90 days, Berglund said. We've received questions for a long time from moms willing to donate milk, Lucinda Edgren Gebhardt of Advocate Broman Medical Center Lactation Consultant said after the milk depot opened. Having a local bank is amazing. Normal Home Preservation Program seeks funds. This is out of Normal. Normal's Historic Preservation Commission hopes to kick its efforts to repair local homes up a notch. Members plan to ask the City Council for another $10,000 per year for the Robert G. Bone Historic Preservation Grant Program that pays half the cost of approved exterior restoration or preservation projects to historic homes in Normal. The program's funding hasn't changed since 2002, when it was increased to $20,000, even though the town has designated 143 historic properties, more than doubling the number of properties eligible for grant funding, according to a memo from Associate Planner Taylor Long. That means more properties jockeying for funds that are also accomplishing less due to inflation, Commissioner Chris Nyber said on Tuesday. Members plan to write a letter to the council requesting a $30,000 annual budget for the program, which has exceeded its $20,000 budget three times since 2002, including 2016. I've never not been able to ask for a budget adjustment the times we've gone over the $20,000, but we have added a ton of property that's eligible, said town planner Mercy Davison. Individual projects would still be capped at $5,000, and a single homeowner would still be capped at two awards per year. Davison cautioned the commission that the request is unlikely to be granted for the town's next fiscal year, which begins April 1st. That budget is to be approved in March, but has been under development for months. That's not to say you couldn't recommend this increase now, but the budget cycle is we put it together late summer and early fall, she said. We can say, when you start looking at the next fiscal year budget, keep this in mind. The program started in 1991 at $10,000 per year. Awards have broken that threshold nine times, including four times before 2002. This money is more than well spent, said Commissioner Bruce Warlow. We'd be happy to oblige more requests. Mackinac. Deputy finds a house fire. A Tazewell County deputy delivering an eviction notice reported a basement fire that extensively damaged a Mackinac house Tuesday morning. No one was injured and no one was home at the time of the fire. Mackinac firefighter Tim Weir said the house was empty of furniture, but the attached garage contained a considerable amount of property that appeared to be boxed and ready for a move. Smoke wafted from the garage when firefighters opened the garage door after controlling the blaze. The fire was reported at 10:20 a.m. at 4 Victoria Way, a ranch-style partial brick home in the Heritage Lakes subdivision. The blaze was under control in about 20 minutes, with firefighters from Mackinac, Danvers, and Tremont responding. Two fire hoses were used to attack the fire, and a large supply line stretched through the subdivision, forcing Tazewell County Sheriff's Police to close Westminster Drive. Weir said the fire appears to have started in the basement, but the smoke damaged the rest of the house. Firefighters broke several windows to provide ventilation for smoke that had filled the first floor. Firefighters and law enforcement have not been able to contact the homeowners listed in Tazewell County court documents as Kenneth and Jean Montrose. The three-bedroom, three-bath house was valued at $150,000, but Weir could not estimate a dollar loss from the fire. Tazewell County Detective Larry Steele said the deputy who discovered the fire was in the process of delivering an eviction notice to the occupants. Two detectives were collecting information at the scene following the fire. Detectives said the state fire marshal's office was called to investigate the blaze. Meller murder trial set for May. This is out of Eureka. The trial of a Bloomington woman accused of stabbing her husband to death last year is scheduled to begin in May. Sarah Meller, 30, appeared Tuesday in Woodford County Court for a hearing on a motion to allow her statements to Woodford County detectives into evidence. Prior to first-degree murder charges being filed in the death of Mark Meller, she gave statements to detectives James Schreffler and Robert Gilson at the Woodford County Sheriff's Department. Those statements were audio and video recorded, according to court documents. It is pretty standard to file a motion to admit that evidence because the last thing we want is to get to trial and then have an objection from the defense, said Woodford County State's Attorney Greg Minger. Meller's attorney, Stephanie Wong, said she had no problem with the motion and signed off on the agreement. Meller, a former teacher at Bloomington High School, has pleaded not guilty to stabbing her husband in the chest at a rural Woodford County campsite near Carlock late in the evening on October 15th. He died at Advocate Broman Medical Center in Normal. Wong told Judge Michael Stroh that the defense should be ready for trial within 90 days. Stroh said the trial set the trial date for May 15th. A pretrial hearing is scheduled for March 28th. Out of Normal, next we have service station upgrades taking shape. Exterior fixes okayed, Route 66 attraction to open in spring. The former Sprague's service station is almost ready for its long-awaited close-up. With the Route 66 attraction at 305 Pine Street to open this spring, Normal's Historic Preservation Commission approved three steps Tuesday to improve the exterior: tuck-pointed bricks on the front canopy, and repaired stucco and half-timbering funded from a $16,000 grant arranged by caretaker Terry Ryburn. That work is expected to be completed by May. Officials said last year they hoped to open the attraction in April, but the latest word now is, quote, spring, end quote. We have until June 20th for spring, said Ryburn with a laugh. The project could come back to the commission before then for approval of replica gas tanks to be placed out front and for an exterior sign, said town planner Mercy Davison. The town, which owns the property, is also rehabbing the inside, including replacing bathrooms with new ones that comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act. After the property has opened, they'll remove parts of the building to the south and west, added, after it was constructed in 1931. Ryburn said she has vendors lined up for her gift shop, which will serve as the visitor's center for the property. She plans to stock products that made in the United States and handmade gifts from the Bloomington Normal artists, including soap and jewelry, in the former cafe and office sections. Ryburn still hopes to host musics, plays, and meetings in the building. Future construction work includes replacing the mechanical garage door on the part of the property to be salvaged. "We are saving as much as we can," said Ryburn, who bought the building in 2006 and has fought water damage to the interior. "As much as we can, we will be authentic to the period." The City Council signed off last May on spending $229,000 to buy the property, $200,000 to improve the building, $24,000 to buy an adjoining parking lot, and $5,000 to compensate Ryburn for her work. The town has also renovated that parking lot with $148,000 in sales tax funds for economic development. Under the deal, Ryburn gets out from under a $229,000 mortgage, receives $29,000, and has 10-year options to operate the building's gift shop and continue living on the second floor for $120 per year. Homeless man charged after downtown incident. This is out of Bloomington. A homeless man was charged Tuesday with resisting arrest and disorderly conduct in an incident at a downtown restaurant. Isaiah Campbell, 25, is being held in McLean County Jail in lieu of posting $1,035. Public defender Carla Barnes filed a petition Tuesday requesting a psychological evaluation of Campbell to determine his mental fitness to stand trial at the charges. A Bloomington police officer suffered a minor injury during the suspect's arrest on Monday morning. BPD Officer Scott Lake said police were called around 10 a.m. to the Subway restaurant at 109 West Jefferson Street for what was described as a robbery report. "A man came inside and demanded money from the register and an employee," Lake said. "No weapon was displayed or implied," Lake said. "The worker did not give the man any money." But prosecutors did not file charges related to the reported robbery attempt. When police arrived, they found Campbell outside the business. During questioning, Campbell became combative, and an officer received a minor injury to his hand during the arrest. Oh, this is from the column titled How Time Flies. 100 years ago, February 15, 1917. Today is moving day for BHS. Classes will be held in the new building at Washington and McLean Streets, and the old BHS will become Jefferson School. The bleachers were just installed in the new gym this week, one of the last construction jobs to be finished. 75 years ago, February 15, 1942, two Peoria and Eastern freight trains collided about a mile west of Union Station. The crews escaped serious injury, but the caboose of the eastbound train, loaded with animal feed, caught fire and burned down to a lump of twisted steel. 50 years ago, on February 15, 1967, a legal snag forced Edward Helt and incumbent City Councilman Frank Hartenstein and Lawrence Nordine off the primary ballot. But they campaigned intensely, with Hartenstein and Nordine winning enough votes to move on to the general election. 25 years ago, February 15, 1992, Central Soya has chosen Gibson City as the site for its new 120,000-square-foot warehouse for food-grade products. Four people will work there. Central Soya already has a major grain processing plant in Gibson City, which won out over three other sites. Today's Flick Fact. Question. All sorts of surveys have best and worst states to retire lists where people can retire the best and most thriftily. In a recent poll, Illinois finished as the 31st best state in which to retire. Do you know the one category in which Illinois is especially bad and brings down the state in such rankings? 1. Choice property crime rate. 2. Cost of living. 3. Amount of taxes. 4. Life expectancy. And now we will bring you the answer. Flicked Facts answer. Illinois fares decently in property crime rate. 16th safest state, cost of living 22nd least costly, and life expectancy 24th best in America, according to a recent study carried out via figures and research from the U.S. Census Bureau, the Council for Community and Economic Research, Gallup Healthways, and the Retirement Living Information Center. But Illinois gets pulled down in such polls because Illinoisans pay the most taxes of any state in America. Today's highlight. On February 15, 1867, on the beautiful Blue Danube, a waltz by Johann Strauss, the Younger, was publicly performed for the first time by the Vienna Men's Choral Society, garnering a polite, if decidedly less than enthusiastic, audience response. In parentheses, a revised orchestral version proved much more successful, end parentheses. And on this date, in 1764, the site of present-day St. Louis was established by Pierre Laclede and Auguste Chouteau. In 1898, the U.S. battleship Maine mysteriously blew up in Havana Harbor, killing more than 260 crew members and bringing in the United States closer to war with Spain. In 1933, President-elect Franklin D. Roosevelt escaped an assassination attempt in Miami that mortally wounded Chicago Mayor Anton J. Cermak. Gunman Giuseppe Zangara was executed more than 4 weeks later. In 1942, the British colony Singapore surrendered to Japanese forces during World War II. In 1952, a funeral was held at Windsor Castle for Britain's King George VI, who had died 9 days earlier. In 1961, 73 people, including an 18-member U.S. figure skating team en route to the World Championships in Czechoslovakia, were killed in the crash of a Sabena Airlines Boeing 707 in Belgium. In 1967, the rock band Chicago was founded by Walter Perezader, Terry Kaith, Danny Serafine, Lee Longnane, James Pankow, and Robert Lamb. The group originally called itself The Big Thing. In 1971, Britain and Ireland decolonized their currencies, making £1 equal to 100 new pence instead of 240 pence. In 1982, 84 men were killed when a huge oil drilling rig, the Ocean Ranger, sank off the coast of Newfoundland during a fierce storm. In 1989, the Soviet Union announced that the last of its troops had left Afghanistan after more than 9 years of military intervention. And the thought for today, nothing is mine. I have only nothing, but it is enough. It is beautiful, and it is all mine. Spoken by Katherine Ann Porter, American author, from 1894 to 1980. This will conclude our first half of the Pantograph for February 15th, 2017. We will take a short break and we'll resume briefly.